Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I'm a long, tall Texan. I wear a tin gallon hat. We ride from Texas where the tin gallon hat. Yes, I'm a long, tall Texan. I wear a tin gallon hat. That's your head.
We rise from Texas, where the tin gallon hat.
Well, I'm a long, tall Texan. I ride a big white horse.
We rise from Texas, on a big white horse.
Yes, I'm a long, tall Texan. I ride.
We ride from Texas on a big white horse.
Well, I was walking down the street with my shiny badge, my first gin at my feet.
Gin at his feet.
I seen a man coming with a gun.
I just can't.
I'm a long, tall Texan. I enforce justice for the law.
You ride from Texas to enforce the law.
Well, I'm a long, tall Texan. I enforce justice for the law.
We come from Texas to enforce the law.
People look at me. Is you the law?
We ride from Texas to enforce the law.
Well, I'm a long, tall Texan. Yes, I'm a long, tall Texan.
It's a long, tall Texan.
Yes, I'm a long, tall Texan.
Not a big white
horse. I ride a big white horse.
Yes, you do.
A big white horse.
Yeah.
I ride a big white horse.
Get it up.
I'm a long tall
Texan. Good Sunday afternoon, princes and princesses of patriotism. Giddy up time. I am the long, tall Texan, your host, Michael B., here to enforce the cause of conservatism. Folks, I'm very excited. We've got another great show lined up today. We've got Mark Gorman, State House District 96, an old friend of mine from last summer. Mark and I have kept in loose contact, but here lately, you know, I've talked about this till I'm sometimes feel like I'm talking to a brick wall. I've written blogs about it, how we must maintain our civility in what it is we do in grassroots activism, because we will be together, we will maybe tentatively go in different paths, but we're all in the fight for conservatism, and we all come back together. And Mark Gorman, my buddy from last summer on Kane, on Team Kane, is a fine example of that. I can't wait to bring him in. I've got a special surprise today. My buddy Teresa B. is feeling under the weather today. So our longtime partner, yeah, that's right, folks, you got it. Becca L. is on air with us, and I'll be bringing her on shortly, as well as Brian Hughes is in the house today. And both of them, Becca and Brian, have a little project they're going to speak to us about as well. So with that, I want to jump right into my editorial and get Mark on. Mark is a very busy man, as you can imagine, running for State House, has a family, has a job, so he's on a limited time. And I just want to say happy May 6th to you. You know, yesterday was the 5th of May. Yesterday was the day that that Obama relaunched his campaign. Coincidentally, folks, is it just me or am I just reading too much into this? But Karl Marx was born on May 5th, 1818. You know Karl Marx who wrote the, oh yeah, that's right, the Communist Manifesto. Anyway, speaking of today's show, speaking of Obama, speaking of the great guests that I have lined up, Mark Gorman and Stephen LeBate from New York's Third, I've rehashed an old editorial that I've revamped. I'm revamping a lot of my stuff, moving it more towards my new efforts in life, which is just conservatism in general, and getting good men like Mark and Stephen and Brian and Anthony and all of the folks we've had on the last 3 weeks that y'all been able to enjoy listening to as well as myself. So I've revamped an old one. Some of you are probably familiar with this. I know Mark and Becca is. I wrote this actually last summer for Herman Cain, and it's just evolved and it gets bigger. And I've decided to make it the ongoing blog because as I interview folks, I'm going to add to it. But I won't read every time the first part. But today we're going to read the first part, which is Xenophon. I think in his Institution of Cyrus somewhere mentions that one of his heroes had come to the conclusion that he had two souls, a good one and a bad one, which predominated alternately. When the good one had ascendancy, his actions were all good and benevolent. But when the evil principles prevailed, his actions were all vicious and detrimental. If ever a man had two souls, I think our president, Barack Obama, has. For his conduct is clearly prompted by two opposing and governing principles as that of the Persian prince. In 2008, Obama ran for the Democrats' nomination for his party and ultimately became the president of the United States. He ran on a pledge and a promise of hope and change, a promise of transparency, a promise to fix all the ills in a bipartisan manner, and all the ills that are killing our country. Yet all his promises have been failures because of his lack of character, because he never believed the promises he made, and because he is an ideologue that feels America is inherently wrong, thus his ambition to fundamentally change America. For this much is true, patriots, there has been no hope in change, but rather fear and divisiveness. Election 2012 is a defining period in America's history. How will that history write of what became of the United States of America? Will the recorded remonstrance be that when it was known that the national treasury was without a dime, that the resources of the country were exhausted, public credit was prostrate, in short, the nation was bankrupt both financially and morally, that confidence was destroyed in both political parties and with the executive and legislative branches, that we were surrounded with inveterate and implacable enemies upon our borders, that insurrection and insubordination to the laws stalked abroad through the land, that America's people were without work and unemployment ran rampant, and that dependency upon the government for assistance had become the norm. In a word, we were reduced to the very lowest point of national degradation, and that by way of Greece and other Western European nations, we saw our fate and sat idly by? Is that how history will record our fate? Or shall future historians record that persons rose from the ranks of common Americans, persons of moral compass and principled ideas that had worked their way up in life and pulled themselves up by their bootstraps with solid, sound, conservative principles at the gloomiest period of their country's history? In the darkest hour of a nation's travail to deliver her from thraldom and bondage, that these mighty Herculean men and women of principle delivered their country from the fangs of the political python that had enveloped her within its folds. Shall it be told to posterity that at such a time and under such circumstances, these people, by common consent of American citizenry, acquired the name of benefactor to their country and saved her from this hydra-headed monster that she had been left an easy prey and threatened to devour her in whole? Folks, there are many fine conservatives who are principled men and women of Herculean strength. Patriots like Craig Bickley running against a rhino, big spending Gary Ficus here in Tarrant County for County Commissioner Precinct 3. Matt Krause running in the Texas House District 93 against the Rhino, who betrayed We Tea Party conservatives Barbara Nash. Folks like Zach Poskovich, who is running against the Rhino Bob Corker in Tennessee. And Brian Cahill of Connecticut, who is in a primary with Linda McMahon to replace Chris Shays. There's also good men of substance and conservative principles in Minnesota like Anthony Hernandez and Chris Fields, running against liberal terrorists like Betty McCollum and Keith Ellison. And my guest this weekend, Mark Gorman, a man I've known for a year, whom I can personally vouch for and say is a sound, solid, principled conservative for State House 96 in Georgia, and Stephen LeBate of New York's 3rd Congressional District. Let me tell you a little bit about Mark. Mark moved to Duluth, Georgia in 1989 from Dublin, Ireland. He's a naturalized citizen of the United States and a resident of Norcross, Georgia since 1991. Mark's vision for Gwinnett County, Georgia is jump-starting redevelopment by creating incentives for local and national business, restoring community involvement and responding to citizens' concerns with the district, restoring integrity to the office and gaining people's respect through honesty and transparency, and rewarding citizens, civics groups, organizations, and businesses that continue to maintain and enhance people's quality of life in his district. Now, folks, I tell you every week, we need to spend less on one person and spend more on a bunch more. I urge you to go to www.gorman2012.com and spare $5 into Mark's coffers. You know, $5 will buy two signs. It'll help purchase a lit press kit. And I'm going to bring Mark on in here in just a minute, and he'll tell us a lot more about what's going on locally there in State House District 96 in Georgia. And then our next guest is going to be Stephen LeBate. Stephen's core values include the desire to serve his country. He first proved this as an officer in the United States Army and Army Reserve. He's now set his sights on serving his country as a member of Congress, representing New York's 3rd Congressional District. In his civilian life, his profession is financial services, where he's assisted his clients with all aspects of financial planning. He also holds a certified retirement counselor's designation from the International Foundation of Retirement Education. He's a conservative with the financial knowledge to tackle the issues confronting businesses and entrepreneurs, folks, the very backbone of the American economy. Stephen believes, as we all do, that America is facing a defining moment. He knows that our out-of-control spending has led to our enormous debt and is destroying our economy. Roughly 41% of every dollar the federal government spends is borrowed. And there's no end in sight, my friends. There's no end in sight. That's why I say we saw our fate by way of Western Europe and Greece, and we've sat idly by. Stephen, like Mark, will fight to eliminate massive government spending and cut government overregulation that strangles small businesses. And as a former officer in the U.S. Army, Stephen also believes in a very strong national defense. And folks, you can find Stephen's website at www.lebateforcongress.com, and I'll be putting those on the chat board here in just a second. But let me just finish up by saying all of these conservatives, Craig, Matt, Zach, Brian, Chris, Tony, Mark, Steve, many more that I'm not even mentioning and many more that I will hopefully be interviewing, are all fighting for America, for truth, for the principles our country works. Founded on, and all of whom will adorn their laurels as perennial and bright as those that adorn the memory of Hannibal. And just as Hannibal took his fight to Tiberius Longus at Trebia in the Second Punic War, in that same vein, these principled conservatives will take their fight to Washington, D.C., or to their state houses in their respective states, or to their county courts, to their county commissioners' courts within their counties. And they will lead America, they will lead our states, and they will lead our counties by the examples of their character. And I pray heaven in all its mercy that they will deliver us from the moral decay that is plaguing our country. And it is my greatest hope that the latter of the two histories I described is what my descendants will read. Patriots, will you help fight for Americans like this? That's my editorial, and I'm sticking to it. I'm going to go ahead and bring Becky in here real quick to say hi, and then we're going to move right into our buddy Mark Gorman. He's on a tight schedule, Becca. It's good to have you on. Thank you very much. And Mark, you've got a hot mic as well. So go ahead, Becca, real quickly, and then let's get Mark on here to talk a little bit about what he's going to do for the great state of Georgia.
Absolutely. And it's really great to be back on. It's kind of like being back on a regular, like a school schedule or work, you know, something where, I got to talk to you this morning and we talked over a few things. And unfortunately, Teresa wasn't feeling kind of under the weather. So I'm glad to jump in and just kind of do my part when we were volunteering for Rick Santorum and doing that type of thing. So definitely I'm excited to have Brian Hughes on as well. And you've got some great guests. And there's a lot going on, a lot to do for conservatism. And we all do our best to do that. So, you know, feel free to bring your guests on. Thank you again for having me on. And anytime that I'm able to, I'd be glad to help out with your show. Definitely. Michael?
Oops, hello, I'm sorry.
I didn't talk all that long.
It was me. I'm sitting here chatting away. I said, thank you very much, Becca. I love you. It's great to have you co-hosting with me today. And with that, Mark Gorman, are you there, buddy?
Hey, I'm here. Thanks, Michael, for having me. And that introduction's got my blood going. I appreciate it.
Well, great. Yeah. I'm just so tickled to get to talk to you. It's been a while since we chat back and forth on Facebook from time to time, and God knows we did a lot on the old dashboard. But man, I was so glad when Bill Monsees told me that you were running in Georgia, and at the same time, I mean, almost that same weekend, Teresa, our old buddy Teresa, said Michael, Mark lined up. So, Mark, I want to turn the floor over to you. I've done a little bit of research, and as you can tell, not enough, but my knowledge of,
okay.
of politics in Georgia, though it's probably not much difference from the overall problems that all states are having. Right. I'm sure that mine are similar to yours with overtaxation, property taxes too high, people want to spend money on stupid stuff like high-speed rail. I'm sure y'all have similar issues. Mark, the floor is yours. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Gorman, my friend for a year now, thank you so much for coming on. Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me, Michael. Well, I just want to start off real quick and say, you know, with the whole Obama thing, you know, the healthcare issue that's going on right now, we got to remember it's not just about healthcare. Not Republicans not wanting to help people out, because Republicans are some of the happiest and helpingest people there is. But with the healthcare, it's about giving the government too much power, and we need to stop that. We can't let the government have all that power and control our lives and tell us what we do. When I came from Ireland, we were getting away from the entitlement, the me, 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 the give me, give me, give me, without putting anything back. That's why we came to America. That's why we came to Georgia. We were looking for freedom. And unfortunately, this time around, freedom is getting taken away. And we need to stop that, and we need to tell the government no more. And unfortunately, in Georgia, it's a very Republican state, and I'm sad to say that there are Republicans out there that just need to change their name to Democrats because they're acting like it. We don't have enough conservatives in the Capitol. Unfortunately, you know, we're going towards the way of Cuba, and Americans don't want to be like Cuba. We're not trying to get into the healthcare system just so, you know, nobody's running to Cuba to get checked out on if Cuba has such a great healthcare, thanks to Michael Moore.
Mm-hmm.
So, but also with the taxing, Georgia's working on a SLOSS tax, which is a special purpose option tax, if I'm saying it right. And that's going to be for the transportation. Government's looking for more money they don't know how to spend, and money that they're not going to spend properly. And they're going to spend it on, they say, transportation. The tax is going to be there for the next 10 years. But we all know that we can't trust government to take away a tax after it's been implemented. At the same time, they're trying to redo the Atlanta Falcons Stadium. They want to spend about $1 billion. And yet, here you are spending $1 billion on a stadium, but yet you're looking for more money to redo our roads. And even in the T-SPLOS, it doesn't cover all the road systems. It actually covers more than just roads, and it allows the government to go into debt without repaying it right away, which we know government should be revenue neutral. So,
Well, and you know, Mark, we had that same issue here in the Metroplex, as a matter of fact, with Jerry Jones in Arlington. Now, in hindsight, I don't know. Arlington's making oodles of money. I'm a free market guy. I don't think the government needs to be giving special tax breaks to build stadiums. And then on top of that, claiming eminent domain and taking people's land away from them.
Exactly. Yep.
But you know, we eventually did get our new stadium. And what you're talking about, we just experienced here in the Metroplex. Arlington, that's how they got Cowboy Stadium to Arlington, was with special tax breaks that the city picked up, or I should say that the citizens of Arlington picked up to get Jerry Jones to build that. Now, that man's worth a fortune.
Yeah,
you know, he could have got American Express to pick up the tab on that, I'm sure. But anyway, back to you.
Well, no, you're fine. But thing is, you know, I'm all for adding new buildings and adding new football stadiums when the economy is right. But right now, the economy is not right. We should be tightening down our budgets.
Absolutely.
We should be looking at what we're spending money on, and we should be looking at our politicians' salaries. Because why are you making, you know, $250,000 to run our state, but you're running it into the ground? So that's my problem.
Absolutely.
I'm not a politician. I've never done anything like this before. I'm a concerned citizen that's just upset with the way things are going. And I need to get involved. I need to do something to help it out.
Well, that's how we have to do it, Mark. That's exactly how we have to do it. Exactly what you're doing. I mean, we started this thing together, a year ago at least. I know I started. You were already there. And
yeah.
I've taken it to the step of getting more involved in just in the county GOP in general. Not have no desires to run for an office. Whereas you're actually wanting to. You're setting it up there on the chopping block, and you're going all out, which is just awesome. And let's just, you know, yeah, there's a lot of congressional folks up in D.C. that make too much money. What you're talking about doing, I don't know about in Georgia, but I think our congressional district, our House district, like Matt Krause, for instance, the equivalent, the guy I'm supporting that would be your counterpart in my district here in Texas. I think they make about – they meet every other year down in Austin. I think they make about $600 or something like that. I mean, it's not – they put way more money out than – you know. So you're talking about pure grassroots here when you're talking about getting in at the state level.
Oh, yeah. Because I go to the parties. I enjoy going to the parties, but I'm a firm believer in looking at everything from every aspect. You know, it's not just – a Republican issue. It has to be a conservative issue. Is it right for what's going on? Are we protecting the Constitution? Because the problem is sometimes people get up there and they get greedy, or they start making decisions that benefit themselves, and they don't realize they're hurting us. And that one little decision is going to reflect upon everybody else and change all of our lives for the worst.
Well, let's talk about a few things, Mark. Folks, as usual, I just told Mark, you know, we'll basically let Mark talk and tell us about what he's got going on, and I'll ask a few questions here and there. And there's one glaring question, Mark, that I'm sure that you're probably used to getting all the time, since you did immigrate from outside of the United States and you're a naturalized citizen, and that's immigration. And that's a hot topic for everybody. And you and your family did it the right way. By the way, I'm of Scott-Irish descent myself. You're my brother. Although I am so far removed, I could hardly claim it. But anyway, and I know that Georgia, like Texas, all the southern, especially probably as much or more so than in Texas, even though we're a border state. The southeastern states, where there's a lot of tobacco and cotton farming, has a very high immigrant rate. And I know that y'all have issues with illegal immigrants in your states because of the agriculture business. So as someone that came with their family from Dublin, Ireland, and went through the process, which is a long, tedious, aggravating process, what are some of your thoughts on immigration? Can you elaborate on that a little?
Yeah, definitely I can. I'd like to start off with saying, you know, I didn't become a citizen until 2006, but on September 11th was a day that really made me sit there and just took me back. And after then, I never thought of myself as an Irish American. I thought of myself as an American. And because of that sad incident, it gave me the pride and the pressure to make the steps to become a citizen, to come back and help this country, which is kind of sad because I know everybody sees in their day-to-day lives that, you know, it's been 10 years, but a lot of people act like it's been they act like it's been 100 years since 9/11, and it's a little sad because people need to have more pride in what's going on. But also, my parents took 6 children and left their home, the comfortable home that they knew, because things were getting as bad as they are now here, picked up, took every penny they had, left all their stuff behind, and came to America and do it all over again. And I want to ensure that enthusiasm that my parents had, I want to carry that on to my children, let them know, don't get complacent, don't misunderstand what's going on, get involved, get informed. And with the illegal immigration is, I understand why people are coming here. I understand why they're doing it illegally. It's hard. It's not easy. But at the same time, the government needs to reform immigration. They need to make it less complicated. They need to sit back and take back half the forms they have out, because you're waiting years and years and years just to have permission to come into the country. And then you have to get permission to become a resident. Then you got to get permission to become a citizen. It's a long, drawn-out process that doesn't work for everybody. It doesn't apply to everybody. It's just some pencil pusher in Washington saying this is the way it should be done, and I don't agree with that. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Mark, here's the scary thing about it. What you're saying is, now take that same bureaucracy that you're describing and apply that to a national health care mandate should it not get turned over.
Right.
You know, that's a scary thought. I mean, look at what your father and your mother could – and incidentally, isn't it ironic? Ireland's economy is really turning around. That's starting to become a booming country.
Yep. Not as good as it was in the 90s, though. In the 90s, they had great tax incentives for businesses to come in there. And that's what America needs to realize, is that if they bring those tax incentives back and reduce tax rates, those jobs will come back over. That's why I'm a firm believer of the fair tax. And I love Herman Cain's 999. I think it would be a great, you know, motive to go to the fair tax.
Absolutely. And, you know, of course, we all love the 999. Of course, you know the direction I went after Cain. And, you know, I think I've learned so much since then, Mark. I think there's several things that we could incorporate from all of the candidates that and really come up. You know, I think you hit the nail on the head, Mark. We conservatives, we're not the racists, anti-immigrant, homophobe, anti-women folks that the left paints us to be. We care. First of all, our basic three principles are less government, less taxes, and the opportunity to be successful in life. That's it. That's that. I mean, now how can that be harmful to any? It's race neutral. It's gender neutral.
Okay.
You know, so the more that government gets involved in our lives, the more of a nuisance they become, the harder it is to be successful. And then with back to the immigration thing, when you have folks that are coming in, and, you know, look, and let's just be honest, not all of the legal immigrants are brown. A lot of them come here on an airplane from Europe and overstay their welcome.
Yes.
A lot of them come from our northern border. A lot of them come over from the east. So it's a problem that is across all borders. I think we tend to see the problem with Latinos because we have so many Americans of Hispanic descent, and I think people don't fairly step back and, you know, you see a Mexican American or a Cuban American or whomever, and you automatically, you know, you start thinking, are they illegal? You know,
yeah.
That's unfortunate. It is because, you know, really, let's be quiet. I had Anthony Hernandez on last week. The Latino community, if ever a political ideology suited a culture, if you will, conservatism, the Latino community is a very conservative community. And
right.
What's happened is just with whether you're white, brown, or black, it doesn't matter. If you're people that are struggling financially have become so dependent upon our government that they can't see the forest for the trees.
Right.
And they've lost their will to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and do like you've done. What are some of your thoughts on that?
Well, it's like I said, people get complacent. You hear people that are from other nationalities that live in America were born in America, raised in America, and they complain about America. But the thing is, people who come here have so much respect for America, and they try so hard to be part of that, and they don't want to change America. They want America to be the way it is, and they work hard. And, you know, I like what Newt said a couple of months ago when he was still in the race. You know, you're not going to take every illegal immigrant out. Granted, they all broke the law by coming in here illegally. Yes, I understand that. But why waste our money and resources kicking down the door of a 90-year-old man who's been living here for 30 years illegally and spending all the money to send him back when we got other criminals running around causing more danger to people? Now, I'm not saying give the 90-year-old man a break. I'm saying give him a tax, a fine, something, make him pay for the fact that he's here illegally. But why are we going to spend all that money to send him back just so he can cross over again? That's all that's going to happen.
Exactly. And I think, you know, the immigration is a very tough call because we are a compassionate people as Americans. And regardless of what half of America thinks, we are compassionate people as conservatives. And we have to prioritize things in a way that is logical, and though we may be compassionate, we compartmentalize things. Okay, first of all, in the case of immigration, did you get here legally? If not, okay, then it's like a flow chart, and it's a very complicated issue, and it's going to take brains a lot bigger than mine to come up with an answer. I think Newt had some good answers. I don't know if they're right or they're wrong. I hate to be that cold-blooded bastard that says, the heck with them all, send them back if they came illegally. I don't know what's the right answer. I believe in the rule of law. I guess that's my number one thing, is the rule of law. But in the case of someone that's been here for 10 or 15 or 20 years, they've been a decent person. They've contributed to society. They've contributed to our tax base. And other than the fact that they're breaking the law because they got here illegally, how do we handle these people? Is there a way that we can come up with that's beneficial to them and beneficial to America? Because I happen to believe that a lot of these folks come here are benefits to America. There are those that are criminals. They need to be locked away just like our own that have been born here. But there's benefits to everyone that wants to be a benefit to society.
No, I agree. Well, I agree 100%. I mean, it's like I said, the number one answer isn't always send them home because they're just going to come back. Let's say, okay, we understand this is what's happening, but we're going to have to do something about it. We're going to have to give you a fine. We're going to have to, just community service, something to prove your worth in our country. And as long as you're not committing any major crimes. Like when I was a resident, when I was just a resident, if I had any kind of traffic incident, I would have been sent home. If I was arrested for anything, I would have been sent home. And I was here legally with a resident card. And I would have been extremely punished by being sent all the way home without permission to come back. And that's just ridiculous because here we are spending the money. Could you imagine my dad and my mom spending the money on 8 people to come here on a plane, pay the visa cards and all that? You know, it just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. Mark, listen, I'm going to pull Becca. You probably remember our buddy Becca Lauer. And yes. I'm also going to pull in a new guy that I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's a great guy to know. He's a strong conservative. I'm going to pull them in with this conversation. And when I pull them in, I've got a call that I need to screen real quick, okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, Becca and Brian, would you guys go ahead and chat with Mark and let's extract some more information. We got a great interview going with Mark here. Brian, by the way, this is our buddy Mark Gorman. Brian, Mark, Brian.
Hey, how you doing, Brian? Good to meet you.
Pretty good, hey, Mark. Nice to meet you too.
Hey, Mark.
Thank
this
you,
is Becca.
Hey, Becca. Nice to meet you.
Thank you so much. Goodness. Well, you guys have had a great conversation going, and so this is kind of a nice surprise. You pulled us in, but that's okay. Maybe you can tell us a little more about kind of your background. I knew you talk a lot about a little different issues about immigration, those type of things.
Yeah.
But maybe what really inspired you to get active? Because not everyone is. You know, people have opinions. People, all have their own views, but not everybody steps up and does what you're doing. So if you can talk maybe about that.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, well, growing up, like many kids, I was the person that was like, I want to be a race car driver. I want to be, you know, the garbage man. I wanted to do everything growing up. And it never stopped. I became a manager at a restaurant. I became a manager at Staples. I became a supervisor for a security company. And I wanted to be a police officer at one point because I love helping people. I love getting involved. But when I was working security, I realized that being a police officer wasn't the way I want to help people. As a police officer, you're helping people when it's too late, when they don't need it, they don't want it, or they have to have it. I want to get in there. And then I thought, well, maybe I should be a teacher. If I could be a teacher, I can help the kids when they're young, get involved, teach them the right way before they make the wrong way. So I started doing volunteer programs like Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Turnaround Coaching, where I took youths in and we would go around and I would teach them the proper ways to act and be kind of their mentor. Well, as the more I got thinking, it's like, you know, I really want to make a big impact. So I thought the only way I can get out there and help and stop complaining and shut up and put up was to go and run for office. Because I have a district that I think is about 25,000 people. It's 17,000 registered voters. But the numbers aren't 100%. And I think what a great impact I can make, not just for my district, for the surrounding districts. Because obviously I'm making decisions for the state, not just my local district. And
sure.
That's why I was like, let me get involved.
Great. Brian, what do you got? You have a question? Brian's from Florida. He's down in the Fort Lauderdale area, and I'll be talking to him a little bit later. Oh, cool. Later I'll be talking to him. He did go to the Broward County Lincoln Day dinner last night and saw some amazing speakers, people like Colonel West and Pam Bondi. Apparently, I guess he was very impressed with those. But Brian, if you have something for Mark, I ask him a little bit about what he's up to.
Mark, I'd like to hear a little bit about yourself a little bit more. Just kind of like, I'm married and I have 5 kids, so that's kind of what I'm about most of the time. So just kind of seeing. I didn't get a chance to look at your bio on your website. I didn't have enough time, so just...
No, that's fine.
What, are you married, kids?
Well, I'm dating a wonderful girl named Lucretia. We've been dating on for about a year and a couple of months now. You know, I've got a couple of nephews and a niece. You know, they live in... two nephews live down in Florida in Fort Lauderdale with you. My others live up north. And actually, you know, we're trying. We're working on the race. I'm planning on moving, and moving in with Lucretia. So I'm looking forward to that. But you know, the interesting thing about being from Florida, you can relate to this, is Georgia is a great location. It's got great weather. It's a great location in the South. It's got great connecting routes to all the different states throughout the country. But as you know, Brian, that Florida has no state income tax. Same with
right.
Tennessee. So Georgia here's Georgia sandwiched in between two states that are more beneficial to go to. So Georgia needs to realize that they need to turn around and say, okay, we need an incentive to bring people in. And one of those great incentives would be to get rid of the state income tax. Because that would boost up revenue so much. Because I don't know if you're familiar with it. A lot of the film industries are coming into Georgia because they have tax cuts and tax breaks. The last X-Men movie was filmed in Georgia. There's a couple of movies coming out that have been filmed in Georgia. So you know, that's just a little bit about that.
Excellent. Yeah, that's the one. I'm originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and up there is commonwealth, and we have state taxes up there, local taxes. I mean, I think I was living here 3 years, and I was still getting letters from all the different neighborhoods, like from the community, the county, and the state. I was getting letters after 3 years of living here. Still, they were trying to ask me for taxes after not living there for 3 years.
It's ridiculous. It's mismanagement of money. It's mismanagement
right.
of money. And government officials don't realize that they have one job, and that's to create a good budget that's great for everybody. But they go in there, and they come in with their own special interest groups, and think that they're going to do the world difference by making their program be successful by taking money from other programs, and don't realize it hurts people like me and you.
Right, right. And it does. It opens up a lot of doors, not having the burden of a state tax for businesses and for individuals as well. But the yoke that we do have, though, is definitely the property tax. That's a heavy yoke that, you know, we carry down here in Florida.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that has to do with all the theme parks. They want to charge them as much as possible.
Right.
Well, I'm back, guys. Sorry about that. I had Becca had got a call about and the guy, it was a warning. Mark, you'll probably remember these back from Kane Nation radio days when I first got started and got duped a few times. And the guy wanted to know about Secret Service investigations. So that's why I had to duck out, and I asked the guy Secret Service investigations did he want to talk about. And then, of course, I got the pre-recorded obscene thing that he would have played over the airwaves. So I sat there and listened to it, chuckled, and said, thanks a lot for your call, and disconnected him.
Wow.
That's great. So he actually thought he got that on the air, but he didn't. That's hilarious.
That's why I did that. You guys might remember last summer, you know, they would just keep calling back because I kept disconnecting them. And I learned, okay, just let them play. Sit there, listen, let them play it. When they get done, disconnect the call and they'll leave you alone. Because they think they're getting it out. God knows what they're doing. I don't want to imagine it. And, you know, I guess it's the equivalent of when I was 13 years old and I'd call the grocery store and say, do you have Prince Charles in a can, you know, or, you know, whatever, tobacco was.
Deborah in a can, yeah.
So, anyway, Mark, so let's talk. I was looking here at some of your stuff. You've got jumpstarting redevelopment by creating incentives for local and national business. What are some of, now, first of all, tell us, Gwinnett County, what is the major, is that Atlanta or is it outside of Atlanta? Help us. With geography here.
Yeah, no problem. Gwinnett County is about northeast of Atlanta. It's about a 20-minute drive. It's actually one of the biggest, as far as population-wise, one of the biggest in the state. I couldn't even tell you that. I know we're in the million range, but I couldn't even tell you the number. You know, it's a thriving county with a lot of people in there. And my district is a heavy Latino district with a lot of Koreans, too. So, you know, we have a large immigration base out of the state. As far as, like I said at the beginning, I'm not a politician. I don't know how to write a bill. I don't know how to go up to the state, but I want to learn how to do these things because I want to help out. So I want to look into what we can do to bring businesses in. I actually have a meeting coming up with the American Federation for Children. And they do a lot with the education system. So we're going to sit down and talk what, as a state representative, can I do to help them bring a better education system. So I'm looking for another organization I can sit down with and do the same as far as incentives for bringing businesses back into the state. Because it's sad. I don't know how it is in Texas, but I'm sure you drive around and there's always those couple of buildings you see that are shut down, empty, with nothing in it. And all it is a hole for crime for people to go and hang out.
Right.
So I want to change that.
Well, I mean, I could give, you know, for instance, here in Texas, you know, and I'm thinking, for instance, I almost dread to say this, but I now work for Bank of America, but before Bank of America worked for Countrywide, I worked for Countrywide, okay?
Right.
We all know who Countrywide is. Yes, I'm sorry, folks. It's a job. It takes care of my family, and, you know, I have to take care of my family first and foremost.
And you got to do what you got to do.
Exactly. So the people that in your what the position you're looking to do with Countrywide, the incentive was, okay, we're going to give you a tax break if you will bring X amount of jobs to the state. If you don't, there's a heavy penalty for not doing it. So it's a thin line because, you know, you're going to immediately be accused of giving special interests to business, but yeah. you've got to have incentive to get business there, and we all understand that. The I guess the thin line is what is the amount of the incentive, and what is the payback back to the community at large. As far as education, obviously, as a state representative, you're going to have some control over bringing education back to the state of Georgia and taking it out of Washington, D.C., which I know you to be a state's writer. Anybody that was on Team Kaine, I could just, without even them having ever told me, is a state's right person. And well, we all know that the federal government needs to be, you know, education. So obviously you're going to be down in Atlanta. Pardon my ignorance. Atlanta is the capital of Georgia. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
It was the fifth capital. We had four other ones, but it's
now
the
capital. So, you know, obviously you're going to be sitting in the state house there in Atlanta, and you're going to be looking to, okay, how can we get these federal tax dollars out of our state education, take control of our education, and develop a method by which to give our children a better education without the government interference, which has been unsuccessful in giving anybody an education.
Exactly. We pour just to interrupt you, but we pour so much money into the school systems, and it doesn't do anything. It doesn't affect the children. The government schools, as I like to call it, I don't believe in public schools.
We lose you, buddy?
No, you're here. Hello?
Okay, yeah, but we must have hit you must be honest, we hit a sale there for a second. Could you just kind of repeat what you were saying there?
Yeah, no problem. We pour so much money into the public school system, which I like to call the government school system, because that's all it is government school system. When we put so much money and we send it all the way to Washington, D.C. just to send it back to the state, spread it throughout the country, but really we need to let the money follow the child. The money needs to go where the child's going, and we need incentives for the schools, because the school's not going to try and work hard if they're already getting the money. They know the money's coming. A private school has to impress the teacher or impress the parents and say, hey, bring your child here, and we're going to show this A, B, C, and D. We're going to teach him all these different things. We're going to show him all this, and this is what you're going to get for your money. But not with the government schools. It's like, bring your child here. We're going to do your civic duty by teaching your child. And that's it. It's like throwing money into a slow burning fire to keep it going. It doesn't make sense. It's not right, and it needs to be reformed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm assuming that probably to some degree, you probably at the state level, what better place to embrace number 41, H.W. Bush's vision of the points of light? Because you talk about rewarding citizens, civics groups, organizations, and businesses that continue to maintain and enhance people's quality of life in our district. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, but the way I see that is the dependency on entitlement has become so great that's part of the reason that we're going broke.
You're right.
Yet we have churches, we have synagogues, we have all kinds of I'm a Freemason. You know, you've probably heard of the Scottish Rite Hospitals, the Shrine Hospitals. We're a philanthropic organization, okay? You know, setting aside religious beliefs, you know, basically we are a fraternity of philanthropists that are there to offer something to us, to our communities, to help people. We do this without state dollars. The churches do it without state or federal dollars. Really, to me, what's the reward? The reward is that I've helped my community. I don't know what the reward would be from the state. I don't know. Let me go down and stand in the pit down there in Austin and you know, say hi to the governor. I'd be happy with that. but the core principle of 1,000 points of light was a very good principle that I don't think was ever really used as well as it could have been to bring people, as Rick Santorum would say, take people from welfare to workfare with the help of those in the community that are doing it with their dollars from their congregations, from their members, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And what we need is people in state houses like you that want to move the state in that direction and get off of that federal government kit.
Right. That's exactly it, because how out of touch is somebody? How are you going to help a child? And you're in charge in Washington, D.C. You're in the building and you know, wherever the education department is. You're sitting in that building, And how do you think you're helping that child? And you're out of touch. People who are locally based, who are locally involved, just like myself, when I did these programs, when I was volunteering my time, I even volunteered my time with the police department for 7 years, I knew who I was helping. I was there seeing the person I was helping. And it made an impact on my life, and it made a bigger difference than me just sitting in an office building saying, oh, well, this is so-and-so. Okay, well, we need to give this amount of money to that school so he can go through the education. It doesn't do anything.
Absolutely. Well, Mark, I know that you're on a time schedule, so let's give you the floor. Wrap up again, folks. It's www.gorman2012.com. Without going into detail, because that's your private business or your campaign's business. How are you doing on finances? Where do you stand? Do you need lit press kits, signs? Where are you at? I mean, you obviously need some help, as all candidates do. Tell us a little bit about how we can help you. Direct us on Gorman2012.com, Facebook, etc. Whatever you need, Mark, you know that we're here at your disposal. And with that, before I turn it back over to you, you know that I'm at your disposal anytime. All you got to do is say, Mike, I need to, just PM me or whatever, call me on the phone. Say, Michael, I need a money bomb. Can I come on and whatever, take 5 minutes, whatever. You know I'm at your disposal, buddy.
Mike, I appreciate you having me on the show. It's a great honor, and we have a very energetic campaign. Like I said, I'm not a politician. I'm not an established member. I'm a conservative person that's just trying to do good. We need finances. I'm a hardworking person, but I'm not going to be able to pay for it all on my own. And I just tell the people, if you don't buy that cup of coffee, if you don't buy that ice cream, and just take that $5. And go to the website, go to Gorman2012.com. You can do it through PayPal. You don't even need a PayPal account. Also, if you want our email updates and be involved and see what's going on, we're going to start sending a weekly email. It's just going to be a short email, about a paragraph long, just giving a quick description of what's happening. And on the other tab, there's a Be Involved tab. You just fill that out. It takes 5 seconds, and you're involved. It's just I'm just proud to be an American. Yes, I'm an Irish American, but I don't say that. I say I'm American because that's who I am, and that's what I chose to be. And I want to help out my fellow Americans and make not just Gwinnett a better place, but Georgia and this country a better place by doing anything I can do to spread the word that we are here and we're going to make it better. So, I again, thank you, Michael, so much for having me out here.
Oh, anytime, Mark. And listen, all the way, by the way, as you know, Conservative Nation Radio shows this several shows. So we can get you on many different venues. We can get you on a woman show, Women Patriots, we call it. We have a conservative students program, which is fixing to go on summer break, but not till the end of May. That's on Monday nights. But you remember our buddy Rick Burlow from Team Kane Days. Rick has got a show on Bada Boom Saturday afternoons. He's got
Saturday
a very
at 1:30.
Good. Exactly. Good listenership, and he's got some good contacts. I will send you Rick's email. You may, and as well as Brenda, you probably remember Brenda Ward and Billy Cotter. I will send you their contact information and let you arrange with them at your convenience. But the whole Conservative Nation Radio Show's network, which is all of the shows, is at your disposal anytime, buddy.
I appreciate it. Bring it on. I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
All right, my brother. Well, we're going to let you get back to work. And Mark, thanks so much for being on. I'll see you on Facebook a little bit later on, my brother. Oh, by the way, do you have a Twitter account?
Yes, I do. It's Gorman 4, the number 4, DIS96. That's Gorman 4, DIS96.
Okay. All right, my brother.
I appreciate it. Take care. God bless.
All right,
bye.
My brother. Thanks a lot. Becca Bryan, what a great interview with my old buddy Mark Gorman. It's funny. Yeah. A few weeks ago, my buddy Bill Monsese, who really kind of brought me into the Kane campaign last summer, and was the man that made that eventually said, kind of, he and I talked, and he said, Michael, you'd kind of make a good social media coordinator at the grassroots level, and I kind of took on that responsibility. And Bill and I keep in touch quite a bit, and Bill had emailed me a couple of weeks ago. He said he was going to Georgia to visit family. While he was there, he was going to see Mark because he said, do you remember Mark? I'm like, yeah, I remember Mark. He said he's running for State House down there. And within, I think I had just either gotten or got the next day a message from Teresa that said, hey, remember our buddy from Teresa Brusky? Remember our buddy Mark Gorman? He's running stuff. So, you know, it was just really like, wow, this is really cool how things fall together. So I was really, really happy to have my old friend Mark on and be able to help him. Folks, again, that's www.gorman2012.com. Mark is a good guy. I think you could all hear that by listening to him. No, he's not a politician. Does he have all the answers? No, absolutely not. But what he's got is he's got a heart of gold, and he's got the heart of a conservative, and the man works hard, and he's going to get down there, and he's going to do in the State House of Georgia what needs to be done, which might be just for Georgia. You might be saying, Becca, Brian, I don't know, guys, pipe in here. You might be thinking, why do I want to spend $5 for a guy that's running for State House 96 in Georgia? You know, it would be different if I'm sending it to Tony Hernandez or Brian Cahill that's actually going to go to the U.S. Senate where it can affect me, even way down here in Texas. Well, guess what? It's more than just, okay, Debbie Wasserman Schultz from District 20 in Florida affects me over here in Congressional District 12 in Texas. Yeah, she does. Maybe nothing Mark does in State House District 96 in Georgia really truly affects me. But if we don't change the GOP establishment party leaders from state, from county commissioner, from House districts like Mark, up, if we don't change them and get the people in that are like-minded to us, then we're not going to change our party. And we know what has happened. We've seen it. This is our second election cycle that we've had, and I don't really want to go into that conversation, but I'll just say that we've had someone rammed down our throat that the majority of us don't want. And it's because we've allowed our party to be taken over. Becca and Brian, to the extent that you can speak about that, go ahead.
Well, absolutely. And I can, of course, talk about that. On a larger scale, we really did have a case where conservatives didn't choose a candidate early on, didn't get behind as far as on the presidential level. And what we came up with is we had many different factions, as you're saying, kind of fighting each other, and some are still fighting each other. When we have someone named Barack Obama that is essentially dismantling our country right now, and we can't give him another 4 years to see, you know, what else he might try to do, and he's not being very hidden about what he wants to do when he comes out with a slogan like "Forward." You know, that isn't a very, you know, it's pretty obvious where that comes from, and you know, so you know, that's yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. I think that the grassroots is very, very important, especially for people that are first time. Citizen patriots like yourself and like Brian, that we really have to step forward and take charge and take, because of the people that we have there, you know, there are people that have disappointed us even since 2010 that haven't really held up to their end of the bargain, what they said they were going to do if we got them in office. So I applaud you know, any conservative that steps up and does that. So Brian, what are your thoughts?
Hey guys, I'm going to screen this other call real quick. Will y'all take the mic for a few minutes? Okay.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, Brian, what do you think? I mean, you know, kind of generally.
Well, you know, I'm a rookie in this pond for sure. I'm fairly new to the political arena on the grassroots level and, you know, in the established level. So what I can say is that I agree with what you guys are saying about, you know, even the local seats are all extreme. They all affect us on a national level. And it's important that we really stand up, you know, conservatives, that we stand up for our values and actually, you know, get active and you know, if there's anything I've noticed is that it's very similar to the church. What I see in the political arena is a small percentage of the people doing most of the work.
Right.
And, you know, I would love to see that change. And I was one of those people. I was one of those people that was apathetic towards political issues. I was let someone else take care of that, or even maybe some insecurities of not feeling, you know, qualified.
Right.
To be an activist, because I didn't have a degree in political science or a background in politics. You know, I grew up in a blue-collar city with blue-collar parents, all union workers, and we were all Democrats. Everybody in my family was Democrat, and there was no rhyme or reason to it other than it was just something that you did.
Just cultural,
and,
pretty much. It's kind of a cultural thing.
Exactly. You know, I don't have any real background that would give me any kind of qualification, and I really still don't. But the one thing I have obtained is the passion. I have a deep passion for my country. And for what our country stands for. I have a deep passion for patriotism. I have a deep passion for, and it comes from my faith. It comes from my deep passion. You know, I can't take credit as it's some kind of virtue that I have.
Right.
It definitely comes from my faith, and it kind of trickles from that. You know, my faith enables me to care and have passion for my community. And for, you know, my fellow Americans, even the ones that don't agree, you know. Last night I was at an amazing event last night, and Congressman Owen West was there, and he was speaking, and you know, he made a remark about, you know, because the liberals had a real big protest outside the hotel where they won. And it got national headlines about this whole, you know, about that protest. So I'm sure, you know, you guys heard about it. And he just made a remark about, you know, somebody was out there with a sign saying, "Alan, you don't represent me. You don't represent my voice. You don't speak for me." And he said, "No, I don't. I don't." And I agree with that. I don't necessarily speak for people that don't believe the same thing I believe, and I'm okay with that, but I still have passion for them, and I still know that even though, you know, my more liberal brothers and sisters out there in the community think one way, and you know, I think this way, you know, conservative values, freedom, capitalism, you know, preserving the Constitution without trying to manipulate its meaning, you know, or coming up with different definitions for each amendment, you know, to suit some agenda, and just taking it for what it is and taking it for the literal document that it is.
Let me just very briefly, and I'm kind of doing this backwards, but I'm not even all shocked with you, and you know, kind of how this conversation's been going. I'll just tell everybody, this is Brian Hughes. He's someone that myself and Michael have been working with in this, you know, being a volunteer for Rick Santorum, you know, when he was in this campaign. And just really, you're down in the Fort Lauderdale area. You're originally from Pittsburgh, as you were mentioning, a blue-collar area there, and kind of grew up there, Catholic. Background as well, and that you are in marketing. You have worked in the pharmaceutical industry, and now you do social media marketing as your own business. And that you have, you're some of an activist, and I think Michael and you could, you all could speak with that a little bit later. But I was really, the main things I wanted to ask you about, definitely if you can go a little more in depth about the event that you had a chance to go to yesterday, and you know, if you want to talk about doing some of the work you did with the campaign, that would be great too. And Or what else? And also about your faith, which you have a very deep faith, and you have your ministry also that you you work with about recovery for people. And that I've been really inspired by that as well. So,
well, and let me just jump in here real quick,
ahead,
if I may. Also, just to add to what Becca said, Brian, since Senator Santorum suspended, Brian and I and Becca and many of us, this goes back to what I was talking about, how things come around and how you end up working with folks or working closely with folks that you might have worked with on another campaign and then you're not and then now you are. Brian was instrumental in a Facebook group that I treasure, that Becca's involved in. It's called Conservative Network, and it's just a network for conservatives. Brian took the lead and finally decided enough of the bickering. This is, as my buddy Bill Moncey said, we're building the base. Bill, I saw that, and I just didn't have a chance to respond. Bill, like Brian, understands, or Brian, like Bill, understands, we've got to rebuild our base. And so Brian came up with this idea for a conservative network. We're moving away from the candidate pages, except for our local candidates that we're helping individually, either in our counties or states or whatnot. But many of us have kind of went dark on the presidential campaigns. We're working more locally. We're getting more involved in getting conservatives elected across the country, whether we are under that whether we're a potential constituent of that person or not. Is that a pretty fair assessment, Brian? So to what Becca said into that, go ahead. And, oh, by the way, we're waiting for Stephen LeBate to call in. So.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
All right.
Go ahead, Brian. I've shared the link in the chat as well. So anybody that wants to join the Conservative Network Facebook, it's right there for you all to join too.
Thank you, Becca.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I felt there was a necessity to have a network where people could go and get more focused on, you know, the next battle, the next thing, the next thing that we need to jump on board with or to focus on as the presidential race kind of comes to a head, and you know, it seems like we presumptively have a nominee, you know, as it seems, you know, I felt being, you know, led to focus on local and state campaigns, which is actually something that Rick had said in three different interviews right after he suspended his campaign.
Exactly.
Both the same day that he suspended his campaign, he did an interview with James Dobson, Dr. Dobson, and he brought it up in there. He brought it up with another interview after that with Tony Perkins, and then brought it up in a third interview with Greta. And I kind of, you know, felt like that was, as heartbroken as I was after all the effort, you know, the Santorum campaign was my first campaign that I volunteered on ever, and it was an amazing experience. And I sacrificed a lot. You can ask my wife. I put a lot of time and a lot of effort into I mean, we had to build an entire campaign in Florida in less than 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. We didn't have time to think. We just had to do. And I jumped on board with the campaign right in the beginning of January, and was immediately just involved in doing stuff. And never before went to a Republican executive committee meeting in my local county before when I joined, and attended some Tea Party rallies. Now, you know, I was studying politics, you know, for the previous about 3.5 years, and conservatism and everything, and the Republican Party, and what's the difference between the parties and everything in American history. I love history. I've studied American history for a long time now, but I was so intimidated because, you know, they immediately put me to work, the campaign. And I actually, you know, ended up having to surrogate at some Republican, you know, executive committee at some Republican clubs in my county. You want to talk about intimidated? I was like,
definitely. You don't know what to do.
And, but it was great because somebody, another person, one of the other chairs of the county for the campaign, you know, kind of came along, you know, for the surrogate event, and they really helped out because they were involved in politics a lot longer than I was, and they answered a lot of the good detailed questions, and it was my passion. My passion was just what people wanted people to be exposed to, was my passion, you know, and that's the thing. What they even said, they said, we want you to surrogate because we want people to see the passion that you have in Rick and what he stands for. And,
sure.
You know, I was brokenhearted when he suspended his campaign. And I went through a mourning period. And, as weird as it sounds, at least for me, I literally cried over the thing. You know, a grown man, 34 years old, with 5 kids and a wife, and, you know, overcame drug addiction and alcoholism and been through a lot in my life, and I'm crying over a presidential campaign, and I spent most of my life being a liberal Democrat that talked crap on conservatives, Republicans, and politics altogether. You know, I was like one of these hippie kind of Democrats, you know, like more like, you know, just anarchy, you know, that was more the democracy I wanted. I wanted anarchy, you know, kind of like that guy who was on Hannity the other night.
Oh, yeah, he tried to get him a job.
You know, that was kind of like me, you know what I mean? Just kind of just all over the place. And, you know, I went through my process, you know, like it was like a death, you know, I went kind of like through a mourning process, And I took it to prayer, and I talked to my wife about it, and I talked to my spiritual mentors about it, and listened to Rick and watched Rick, and just kind of listening to see what was going on with him and why this was happening the way it happened, because it seemed like we were doing great. You know, it really seemed like we were still making some headway, and it was kind of a shock, I think, for all of us. It was definitely a shock for all of us.
It was.
Yeah.
It definitely was, Brian. And you know, and it was at so many different. And you know, let's face, because we've got new people on now that are listening in, and that are on the chat board. They've been through the same grieving process, and many of those new supporters and Rick supporters were all of mine and Becca's friends. You know, you're a friend of mine from the Santorum campaign. Many of these folks go back to Kane. So, you know, for many of us, we've now done this. I mean, I wrote in one of my blogs, you know, my God, am I a bad omen to anybody I support? You know, because I got behind Kane, he suspends. I get behind Rick, he suspends. You know, my buddy Bill and, you know, some of the other folks out there, Rick Burlow. Rick, by the way, let's go ahead and pull. Hey, and matter of fact, guys, I've got Rick. Hey, what's going on, buddy?
Not much. How's it going, Michael?
It's going good.
It's
I know you've been sitting there for a while. Hey, guys, let's real quickly, I need to get my PSAs in here, okay? We got about 3 minutes. We've got 2 minutes and 53 seconds. I need to get my PSAs in. It looks like Stephen LeBate may have got tied up. I don't know. He could pop in at any time. If he doesn't, I've got a great roundtable group in here, and I've got some folks out there in chat land that I'm looking at. I know that the Padres in the chat room. I'd love. You were speaking about spiritual mentors, Brian. I don't speak to Thomas as much as I should. Not because I don't want to. I love this man. We became friends last summer, and he has been someone that I've sought spiritual advice from. He's in the chat room. There's a guy, Mike, out there in the chat room that was wondering if he could call in. Mike, you're welcome to call in. Dark Prince, I think, if I'm reading that name correctly, had said something about calling in. So there's folks, give us a call. We love – that's what we do here. We love to roundtable. So I'm going to go ahead.
My, Yeah, and briefly, Michael, like right after your PSAs, I'll be glad to read my I wrote an op-ed this week. I'll be glad to read that. It kind of goes to what Mike, what you all were talking about, or Brian actually, about how we have to be able to come together as a party, and how actually how we have to support the House and Senate candidates as if they're, you know, even they're not just local. And
absolutely.
So that's part of what that's about. So I'll be glad to do that if you want to mute yourself. I know how it is after the PSA if you want to
yep.
mute yourself. And
yep.
I will go ahead and read that, and then you just come back on when you're able. We'll do that. And
okay.
we I'll tell Brian, we got 4 brand new members already on Conservative Network that I already added. So
one of them is Padre. I know that. In fact, I think I just brought Padre
right.
on. Is that you, Padre?
Stephen LeBate here. Hi.
Oh, hey.
Oh,
okay.
Hello.
Hey, guys,
hi.
I'm going to throw y'all on mute. And, folks, our New York 3rd Congressional District, Stephen LeBate, is on the line. And, Stephen, I'm so glad you joined us. You probably didn't get the chance to hear my editorial, but I did speak a little bit about you. I'm just going to go over it real quickly just to kind of reintroduce you.
Oh, I appreciate
it.
Thank you.
And then we'll go into your segment, okay?
Thank you
so
very
folks,
much.
We've got Stephen LeBate from New York's 3rd Congressional District, which is amazing for pardon me, I mean just from where I sit in Texas to have a conservative in New York. But we have Stephen. I read to y'all that Stephen's core values include the desire to serve his country, which he has proven as an officer in the United States Army and Army Reserve. He has now got his sights set on serving his country as a member of Congress, and he's going to be representing New York's 3rd Congressional District. Stephen's profession is financial services, folks. And as I said earlier in the opening, this is something that we need. We need folks with the problems that we're having with our economy and taxes. We need folks that are knowledgeable in financial services. He's a conservative with financial knowledge who is willing to tackle the issues confronting the business and entrepreneurs. And folks, the business and entrepreneur community is the backbone of the American economy. He believes that that we need to do all that we can because of the what's going on in America right now is a defining moment, and that this out-of-control spending has led to the enormous debt that is destroying our economy. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, Stephen LeBate from New York. Stephen, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. The floor is yours. I want to turn it over to you.
Well, great. I appreciate it. It was an awesome introduction. And believe it or not, there's a lot more conservatives in New York than you'd think. So, I'm not totally alone. There's quite a few of us, and we're
well,
getting more organized than we've ever been before. So I'm pleased at how receptive people have been to my message. Actually, it's pretty humbling. In my bio, I don't know if you mentioned it earlier, but you know, I come from 24 years military. I'm a lieutenant colonel. Actually, I still wear our country's uniform in the reserves. I commute to and from the Pentagon every month. But you know, for someone who's never held elected office before, the receptivity to my message has been really it's extraordinary. And you know why? Because it's a common sense message. There's nothing that I say when I'm speaking in front of a group of people that is so foreign, or it sounds like politics or politician speak, I like to say. I appreciate you mentioning my financial services background too, and I thank you very much. But you know something, and I say this to whenever I speak to a large group or small group of people. Actually, just last week I was speaking at a Conservative Party function in one of our local towns, and someone brought that up, and folks were saying, you know what, you have you've got this, you're a certified retirement counselor, you've been a financial advisor, you've got this great background in finance. When you get to Congress, do you think people will approach you as to how to fix our country's problems and the budget and things in that nature? And you know what? My answer to that was, first off, I appreciate everybody's respecting my background like that, but the problems we have today in Washington can be solved by any member of your audience that exercises common sense with a checkbook. You don't need to be a certified retirement counselor, you know, to balance your checkbook and to know what's right from wrong. And like Reagan had said, you know, what you have to do is, you know, sometimes you have to starve the beast, all right? You just can't spend what you don't have. And by those principles that I've been speaking to folks on a regular basis, I've been out there aggressively. I got to tell you, I'm very excited about the race. I'm excited about our prospects, and I'm thrilled to death to be here with you right now.
Well, you know, and I appreciate that. I guess, and I can understand exactly where you're coming from. You know, maybe if our government sat down at the dinner table like we all do, and balanced a checkbook, we wouldn't be in this. I guess we get excited though, and you probably can understand this, Steve. We get excited because, you know, we do need. I guess we've got to the point now where we're like, okay, it's not working having these politicians in here. We need people with specific skill sets.
Right, right. And you know what also? I think to your point, I think having the whole concept of a citizen legislator is exactly where we need to be also. You know, in the past, I never believed in term limits. I always thought that term limits, you know what, anybody could get voted out at any time, so that was a term limit. However, now being a part of the process, I realize how nested politicians get into their elected offices, and, you know, my perspective has changed. Our founding fathers, the whole intent was never to have a professional politician, folks like Charlie Rangel, who has been in office how many years, 30, 35 years in Brooklyn. That was never their intention. It was always to have that citizen legislator holding federal office, not someone who's been there forever. And I got to tell you something, when I approach folks with that alone, first off, bring up the fact that, you know, I've never held elected office. I'm a military guy. I'm a family guy. You know, they're very receptive to it because I understand what it's like when my kids had strep throat 2 weeks ago, suddenly got a $1,200 bill from the pediatrician, and you're like, my God, how could this be? You know, when you're a citizen legislator, you're not out of touch like most professional, quote-unquote, establishment politicians are today.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Stephen, let's kind of go into some meat and bones because you're running for U.S. Congress. First of all, who are you running against?
Actually, Congressman Steve Israel. He's the head of the DCCC, which is the Democratic Congressional Committee.
Yep, absolutely. We know who he is. So anyway, and you don't have a primary challenger, is that correct?
That's right. There is no primary. Our main focus right now is on the big contest with him. And very excited about our prospects, especially with the recent redistricting. Congressman Israel actually is, in most races, you're normally an incumbent. With our redistricting, it was pretty drastic, the changes here in New York. Two-thirds of Congressional District 3 right now have no idea who he is, but they also don't know who I am, so we're even. Because this district was dramatically changed. So he's not literally an incumbent in two-thirds of the district, which is why we've started our process so early. We're working to fundraise. We're doing events. We're going to start knocking on doors within the next week or so after we get the addresses. And we're going to be pushing forward in a big, big way.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's move with that. And that takes me right to where I want to go because – as we all know, and I don't want to get into the discussion of 9/11 or rehash it all, but since you're in New York and it affected New Yorkers so bad, plus the fact that you're a lieutenant colonel in the United States Army, I salute you, sir. Thank you for your service. I'm an ex-buck sergeant, 82nd Airborne, 82 to 88. So, I thank you for your service, my brother. That therefore tells me that you have a very strong probably mindset on our national security. Taking all of those little pieces of the pie into effect, you're in a new district. You're up against a challenger that's not an incumbent. You're on equal footing by name recognition. You've got 24-year military service. People in New York, I know that they're across the board like they are anywhere, but they're patriotic folk.
Right.
So how is all of that coming together for you with your 24-year service, not having someone that's an incumbent, with what happened in New York on September 11th, 01, and having that military service? I mean, all of these things fit together. It's like a jigsaw puzzle.
Exactly. And you know what? It's interesting. We were working train stations last week, and folks were handing out my bio. My team was out there, and folks would come back just to say, they'd take it, and normally they'd bring it into the train or they'd drive, walk into their car. a lot of folks just came back to shake my hand to say thank you. So folks recognize service, and I appreciate it. It's not something that, you know, I never went into. Actually, on April 23rd of 1987, when I first swore an oath to support and defend the Constitution, it wasn't my intent to run for Congress. And I think the reaction of people, it's great. But yeah, there is that perfect storm that you're describing, the post 9/11 trauma in the country, the military service, the financial service, the fact that Israel is not an incumbent. And it's for that reason why we're so anxious to get out there and start meeting folks. Because there's two key points here. First off, Steve Israel could park a freight train full of cash in front of his, you know, his Hop Hog office here in New York and buy as much ad time and TV time as he wants. Now, there's a point of diminishing returns where it could actually hurt him, but we're in as much a fundraising mode as anything because we need to raise sufficient dollars not to match him, but to get that story out. We don't need to put my story out 5, 6, 7 times in order for it to stick, whereas Congressman Israel, that's really what he needs to do because he is the incumbent. He's the one who voted for Obamacare. He's the one that voted for the stimulus program. He's the one who voted for cap and trade. So he's got that baggage as well as other baggage, which we need not even get into. So what we need and what we're focusing on is we're trying to raise sufficient money so we can get that story out there. And so far, on a face-to-face level, it's great. It's encouraging, extremely encouraging. We just need to sufficiently fundraise in a short-term time frame so we can put it in the media. So we're not just talking one-on-one. We're talking one on 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 people at the same time.
Right. Now, are you closer – is New York's third, is that closer to – I'm sorry, pardon my ignorance, but I mean I live out
not
here in cow country in Hazlitt, Texas. I mean Hazlitt is a way station into Cowtown, Fort Worth, for BNSF. I mean there's cow pastures all around me. So, I'm not my geography out up there, you know,
fine.
New York's third is a little flimsy. So, where are you in relation to the city? And the reason I'm asking is because whereas we rely a lot on signs out here because we've got oodles of land, the city doesn't. So you're probably looking at lit press kits
right,
as opposed to putting signs out.
Right, and media. And besides, signs this early, they get torn down, destroyed by weather. But we're about 1 hour. Actually, the most eastern part of my district is about an hour by Long Island Railroad to Penn Station, New York. But actually, my district now, because of the redistricting, which I'm thrilled to death about because it's given me a much better demographic to work with, it actually travels all the way to Queens County, which is about 25 minutes out of New York City. So I travel across right now 3 counties of New York, which is extraordinary. So, here in New York, you need motivated people, which is something I've had with me for the past year and a half since I started this process. But it also requires media time and radio and things in that nature and TV.
Okay, so press kit. So money is the most. I mean, obviously we can tweet for you. I can, you know, we can get our tweet teams out, tweeting your name and get your name out that way. But what's important in your neck of the woods is money because of the cost that you have compared to what say my guy here has.
Oh right, exactly.
Significantly different.
Right, and also because I'm going up against by far the most powerful Democrat in the House of Representatives, which quite frankly, I'm thrilled to death to do. I there's something about it. It's literally I'm the tip of the spear for our values going up against Steve Israel. The tip of the spear is the way I like to describe it, and there's no other place I'd like to be. But really it does take a lot of media. But I don't need to match dollar for dollar because our messages are so different when you compare me to Congressman Israel. He'll have to spend, at least 5, 6, 7 times of the money to try to talk people in that he's not a tax and spend liberal. Whereas I don't have to do that just by my background. My background alone, being a family guy, I got, I'm a very blessed man in so many ways. To be quite frank, I really am. I got an amazing family. My wife, I got two beautiful six-year-olds, Michael and Maria. Well, that's when they're not trying to stab each other, but it's I got two amazing kids. And you know what? I don't necessarily need to run for Congress. I really don't, because I do feel very blessed. However, this in itself, above all else, is really, to me, it was a calling, because I was approached to run for Congress by a half a dozen different people at different times last year, and every single time I said no. I'm working full time. I'm a dad. At that time, my kids were 4 years old, but folks were persistent. And you know something? I spoke to my wife, and we agreed, and I started this process. And you know what? I'm very glad I did, because what those folks saw in me has really resonated with other people. They just see me as a normal guy, a fellow who speaks to people, not at them. And it's like I said at the Huntington Civic Association the other day, and it amazes me the reaction I get when I say it, but it's just the way it is. I say to folks, look, I'm not here to tell you what you want to hear. I'm here to tell you what I actually think. And people continually just looking around like, wow, did he actually say that? Right now, folks are very, very disappointed. I mean, let's face it, the U.S. Congress right now has an approval rating in the single digits. I wonder why. It's because people don't believe them anymore. Right? We seriously do need a new crop of elected officials that actually take this job, not necessarily because they need a ride on Air Force One or they're trying to get publicity. They should take this job because of the service that it entails, which is exactly what it is. You know, right now, I'm working really hard for this, and I cherish every moment I have with my kids, but I think this calling, it was meant to be, and I'm thrilled to death to be here, you know, especially with the position I'm in.
Well, and let's face it, what you're doing is just not you. I mean, I'm so glad to hear you say that you spoke to Kathy, a great lady, by the way. We've been friends for a while on Facebook, and you've got to talk to – obviously, you have to sit down to the table and speak to your family. This is what we're going to go do. Are you guys game? Are you on? Are we in this together as a family?
Right. And that's very important. And I went home and – look, the first few times when people approached me, it sounds funny, but I didn't even tell my wife Leticia, because it was kind of – I mean, I go to my wife and say people are asking me to run for Congress. She'd look at me like I was crazy. But it reached a point where I said, look, I need to talk to her. And she was very supportive, because my wife is actually Cuban. And, she comes from a background where – let me tell you something. When you come from another country, especially a country like Cuba, where you have no liberties and freedoms that we all take for granted here – you know something? Quite frankly, you cherish what we have here. And for that reason, she's putting up with, a lot of time, alone with our kids. And for that reason, she's 100% supporting me. But because of her background and her experiences, she appreciates what I'm doing. And I wouldn't be able to do it if it wasn't for her support. There's
Absolutely.
No doubt about it.
So, folks, real quickly, I want to give you Stephen's web address. It's www.labatefor Congress. That's LABATE for FOR Congress.com. And if you
Correct.
Go there, and I say this every week, Stephen, I say this to our listeners, it's not about sending $50 to one candidate. It's about sending 5 or 10 to 5 or 10 different candidates. We're trying to build a base, Stephen, and you're up against Stephen Israel. He, to me, in my mind, affects me. I live in Texas Congressional 12. Okay. My representative
right.
is Kay Granger. People may not think, Kay Granger affects you in New York. She does it, I mean, really adversely. But for instance, Stephen Israel in your district, or Debbie Wasserman Schultz in District 20, Florida, affects me here in District 12 in Texas. So we've got to rebuild a base. You're going to be a part of that base, and that means that we all have to come together and help you the best we can, regardless of where we live in this country.
Right, because what I do here, which is why I said that I am the tip of the spear, it's because of the simple fact everything I do here impacts the rest of the country. This is a national contest, because the more he has to pay attention to his backyard, the stronger the insurgency we have here, and the more threatened he feels. And believe me, he does feel threatened. The reality is that the less time he'll be spending in your district, the less money he'll put towards your district. He'll be more concentrating on campaigning in his new district here in CD3, because I'm already out there. You know, as I said, I had folks working 10 train stations last week. We're going to be hitting stations again this week and malls and what have you. So the more time, the more off balance we have him, then the better it is actually for everybody's district in this country. This is a race of national significance, and you know, that's the reason why also we're reaching out to those members of the House of Representatives who are on the short list for Steve Israel to take out of office. You know, there's 25 individual members of Congress who are my natural constituency to help. And needless to say, we're reaching out to them right now, because this is the time.
Absolutely.
This is the time when you can do it.
Well, and I would imagine, since you don't have a primary challenge, that your Tea Party is, you know, we have some primary challenges going here where I live. So, you know, the Tea Party has chosen people that we are trying to take people behind in our primary to go up against, you know, a challenger on the other side. So, you know, I'm sure that your Tea Party there locally, I know New York has some strong Tea Parties up there, is behind you solidly. Have they done any straw polls? Do you have any kind of idea where you stand against Israel?
Because of the new district, quite frankly, we don't, because this is two-thirds of this new district is brand new territory. We went from a north and south district, because they'll – what happened was, here the courts decided this, the redistricting, where everywhere else in the country the legislatures and the senates came together. Here in New York, they couldn't come to an agreement, so the courts took over the process. So literally this district is now two-thirds brand new. We went from a north-south district encompassing four towns, which were Islip, Smithtown, Huntington, and Babylon. They're all gone, with the exception of Huntington. And now I stretch from instead of north-south, it goes east and west across three different counties. But from what we've done and from what we were getting and speaking to people and knocking on doors, I mean, there's no poll. This is such a new district. Actually, the Board of Elections hasn't even got us official maps yet to show us exactly where the borders are. So it just shows you how new it is. But with the people is what matter, and the NRCC did some numbers. This is a stronger district for me, and from when I'm speaking to people and I'm over at the stations and going to meet people out in the field, they're very receptive, because they realize this is not politics as usual anymore. This is not politics as usual anymore. This isn't just the Republicans versus the Democrats or the conservatives against the liberals. That is gone. What we're looking at right now is, we as a country are looking – it's like we're looking over the precipice. And in 2010, we as Americans – that's Republicans, Democrats, Reagan Democrats, independents – we all said no. No. We need to stop this. And that is the audience that I'm reaching out for, those patriotic Americans – who realize that we are looking over the precipice. Now we said no, but now we've got to start peeling back. We've got to start. We've got to repeal Obamacare. We've got to cut the spending. It's going to be painful. There's no doubt about it. But you know what? There's a way to do it surgically, as opposed to, for example, with the Butcher's Axe. Let's use the Department of Defense as an example. We're going to be cutting $500 billion from the defense budget coming in January 2013. Now, very few people in this audience, I'm sure, would agree with that. That's a prudent thing to do, especially when we have close to 100,000 troops still in the field in Afghanistan. All right, and the world, and we have Iran, and we have China's threat in the Pacific. But like I said, I'm 24 years, I'm a military lieutenant colonel, I'm an MP. Look, I realize that there are places to cut. However, the defense budget should not be the place where you just You know, because let's say the military and the Department of Defense, they don't have the best lobbyists. Well, let's just cut there. And that's basically it. But then again, you know, the federal budget is bloated with waste. The federal budget has incredibly exploded under President Obama. And it's hard to believe that we've actually reached the levels where we're at, but we need to turn the page right now.
Oh,
you know,
it's,
and that's,
it's incredible. I mean, you know, we see our future in Greece.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly – you know what? That's exactly what I say when I'm speaking. I don't mean to cut you off, but that's exactly what I say to people. It's like, folks, when I'm speaking in front of a group of people, I have a crystal ball here right in front of me, and I see the United States 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now. I see Greece. I see Spain. I see Ireland, all these countries that have gone down the road that we're going right now. And it, that message, when you're just speaking to people face-to-face – they appreciate it. They understand it. That's why I keep saying it's not Republicans and Democrats. This is Americans as a whole. We realize there's a certain common sense factor here that we're just not exercising, and that's what I'm trying to bring to the forefront. And that's one of the reasons why you know, our opportunities here in Congressional District 3 are I look at them as being so positive.
Absolutely. Well, Colonel, I can't thank you enough for coming on and spending a little time with us and talking to our audience today. Again, folks, that's www.lebateforcongress.com. Folks, I'm urging you, please, I know I ask you every week for money. I'm not asking for me. I'm asking to help rebuild our base. Lieutenant Colonel Lebate here is the man that can help us do it in a state that needs our – that really needs men like this going to D.C. Colonel, I'd like to give you a few minutes to close. We're coming to the close of the show here. I'd like to give you a few give you the floor and let you polish up with however you want. Do you have a Twitter account?
Oh, yeah, sure, actually. Right now my it's also Lebate for Congress, our Twitter. Actually, probably somebody's tweeting right now on there. But, no, I appreciate the opportunity to, you know, set a few words here. But there's one message I just want to have for everybody. I see a lot of folks, and a lot of folks out there are disparaged, they're sad, they're up for the fight, but you know what, they see things right now, and they're looking at it, our country is never going to be the same, they're scared of President Obama, they're scared about the budget, and they wonder if we're ever going to be as great as we were before, you know, prior to whether it was pre-9/11 or pre-President Obama. They just want to return to a sense of normalcy. Well, I guess this is because this is a national audience. I feel very good in saying this. You know what? If it doesn't destroy you, you know what? It's going to make you stronger. And I would say out here to this entire audience is the fact that in 2010, we as a unified people, Americans, we said, no, this is it. We are stopping. And the reality is that we have an incredible opportunity to peel back the damage that has been done, but stay motivated. But that which doesn't destroy us only makes us stronger. And to just stay motivated, because right now we have an incredible opportunity to turn the page and return our country to where it should be, to the liberties and the freedoms that have made us the greatest and most prosperous nation on the face of the earth. And I appreciate the opportunity just to put that out. I thank you very much.
Well, I thank you, Colonel, and what a motivational speech. I mean, it made me feel good. And you and I know, and as does the audience. You know, I tell people all the time, sir, that it doesn't matter. You know, you and I, we wore the uniform. That's how we served our country. You're serving it by doing what you're endeavoring to do now. I'm serving it by working in the grassroots and helping the local candidates that I'm helping directing their campaigns as a grassroots activist. You know, service comes in many forms. You and I know this. And, you know, I thank you so much for wearing the country of our uniform and serving. What a blessing it has been to have you on. I wish the very best to you, and I'll be helping you as best I can. You've got a form anytime if you need to call in and just need a minute to say, guys, I need a money bomb or whatever. You feel free.
Great.
You've got our number.
Great. I appreciate it. Actually, my wife just knocked on the door. My Twitter is Lebate2012. Thank you so much.
Lebate2012. Okay, we got to put it out. And I've got oodles of followers myself. I'm going to get it out and ask them to start retweeting it.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate the time, and keep up the great work. I really am happy.
Thank you very much, sir.
Yes,
and
sir.
And good afternoon to you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Becca, Brian, Rick, what a great let me get you guys on, let me get your mics on here. What another great interview we had here. I'm going to let you guys let's go. Becca, Brian and Rick, you guys give me your thoughts on that.
Well, I'm going to put Brian on there. Okay, good. Oh, well, that was amazing. I do want to make sure that Brian does get to talk a little more about the Lincoln Dinner, because he did get to see Colonel West and also Pam Bondi last night.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
One other guest.
I tell you what, let's do this then. Rick, I want to get Rick on. He's been waiting patiently, and I was bringing him on. So, Rick, take a few minutes, and then let's let Becca – I want Becca to read something that she has, and then I want to give some time to Brian. We'll probably forego the outro today because we're down to 14 minutes, and I want to take every single minute of it with you three. So, Rick, shoot, buddy.
Okay. Well, Michael, first, I would like to thank you for calling into my show yesterday. It was a blast. And for my show in 2 weeks, I have a very special announcement. For those of you who may have heard of Tony Katz, he from All Patriots Media, he is actually going to be on my show May 26th. So that should be a very interesting show indeed. And also, I had introduced Becca Lois to OwnTheNarrative.com, which is basically a wonderful network made up of brave, courageous patriots, just like Michael and those here at Conservative Nation Radio. As a matter of fact, my show is going to be simulcast on OTN coming up this coming Saturday.
Yep, that's right. It's really, Michael, I can't even really fully explain what they do there. It's the only radio network I've heard of that has an after party. They have on about two, or they have a 3-hour show, and then they go on till you drop. They just leave it on. And tell them, Rick, how long you all were on there one time.
Well, one time Titan 92 and I were on until about 10:30 in the morning Eastern time. You know, just basically talking about numbers, and there were certain times in which we just straight off of politics and just talked about sports or something else, something just off the wall.
Sure, and they had, the first day that I heard the show, they had Chris Lash on there, and people may well know his wife, Dana Lash, runs Big Politics at Breitbart.com, and that was a real thrill for me. And then the fact that you were a regular on there, it really what kept me listening. It was an amazing thing. I'm the co-host again. This is fun. Michael, did you want to play the PSA real quickly? And then I'll go ahead and read the, I don't know if Michael's still on here. No, he muted himself. Okay, well, I guess it's us. Well, if you don't mind, y'all, I'm going to read really quickly the op-ed. Now, this is my very first political op-ed I've ever written, and I was really glad to be able to highlight the Murdoch-Lugar race, which is a very important Senate seat that people are going to be voting on in the Hoosier state coming Tuesday. And this is in a publication that I do work for called Tea Party Tribune, and y'all can go to teapartytribune.com. And it's not just about Tea Party. They have headlines. They have just all different types of information on there, very professionally done, and I recommend that. And, of course, if you like this, I recommend you go and retweet it and send it on Facebook and whatever you can do just to get the message out. And the title is Santorum Murdoch Run Against the Establishment and the Odds. When former presidential candidate and Senator Rick Santorum endorsed Indiana senatorial hopeful Richard Murdoch on Friday, garnering himself a just at local news time mention in Politico, there may have been more going on than one conservative politician scratching another's back. Santorum likely sensed a kindred spirit. From Twitter, this is the tweet he sent, at Rick Santorum, if I lived in Indiana, Richard Murdoch would have my vote in Tuesday's U.S. Senate primary race. I encourage Hoosiers to help out the vote for him, or get out the vote for him. And that was from Politico. In April, the Indianapolis Star reported that Murdoch's donation haul beat out Lugar's, from January 1st through March 31st, he raised $875,000 to Luger's $817,000. Luger's war chest totaled $2.5 million, however. The absentee incumbent, who lost the ability to vote for himself with a March vote by the Marion County Election Board, wasn't able to best the challenger. And the Luger campaign's cries that these donations were tainted, some of them happened to come from out of state, sound downright petulant. In the same article, the National Review notes that Dick Luger has lived exclusively in McLean, Virginia, since sometime in the 1970s. In fact, Sam Frayne, chairman of the 2nd Congressional District GOP in Indiana, says that the last face time he had with Luger was in 1976. Senator Rick Santorum fought an underdog race for president. As he once said, to paraphrase, to call it living on a shoestring is an insult to shoestrings. Murdoch and his bid to replace Luger, it's doing the same thing. The Indiana Senate race is truly a bellwether in one other way, too. Voters everywhere are getting the message. House and Senate races aren't just a local concern anymore. So, there's that. And that's my piece.
Well, I appreciate that, Becca.
Sure.
It was
sure.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Well, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be asked and to be useful, as I always like to say. And if Brian can have just a minute, go ahead. What do you have to say, Michael?
I was just going to say, you're welcome here anytime. But you're absolutely right. Let's give Brian a few minutes, and then it's going to be time to pull the show down, and I'm going to end it with an old friend of mine, someone that I've sought spiritual advice from in the past, who called in that I'm so honored called in. Padre Thomas Smith is on the line with us, so. Go ahead, Brian, take a few minutes, and I'm sorry, we're going to get you back on this show and give you more time, but that's for a whole host of reasons. So go ahead. You got a few minutes, buddy.
All right. Thanks a lot. I can definitely chat. I can go on and on. What did you want to talk about there, Becca? The Lincoln Day Dinner. You want me to cover that?
Yes. Oh,
yes.
Please. Yeah, definitely. Just give us your best story from the dinner.
Yeah, last night I had the honor to attend the Lincoln Day Dinner. It was actually my first Lincoln Day Dinner gala at Breck Committee, Broward County Republican Executive Committee. Held the Lincoln Day Dinner here in Fort Lauderdale downtown at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Beautiful hotel. And the keynote speakers were Pam Bondi, who's the Attorney General, and, of course, Congressman Alan West, which many know who he is. And anyone who doesn't, just Google his name. You'll find out real quick. And you will fall in love with his passion and his intellect and his boldness. it was an amazing night, and all the speakers were good, and we even had an auction, and the auctioneer was, he was a councilman from another county, but I think the guy was hilarious, but full house, great attendance, and Alan West really inspired all of us, and he encouraged exactly what the theme of tonight's show has been about, which is we all need to chip in as much as possible to our local and state congressional campaigns, as much as possible, our own local and other states and other counties. Just reach out as much as possible, as much as we can, and try to pick up the load and fill in the spots wherever there's a lag. And he really inspired the crowd to really do that, and that we have an enemy, and the enemy is relentless, and we can't just lay down, and we can't win on defense. Alan West is a lieutenant colonel from the Army, and he is very knowledgeable when it comes to the art of war. Every time I've heard him speak, he speaks very well about strategy, political strategy, and takes a perspective from you know, the other war approach. And victories aren't won on defense, what he said. They're won on offense. And that is where, you know, conservatives have lacked in, for many years, is in offensive. And finally, especially 2010, we have an offense. And, you know, I just pray that it continues to get stronger. We continue to unite. Even in our differences, you know, I think that we can all come to a place where we can agree to disagree.
Well, you're absolutely, Brian. And, you know, what Colonel West said and what you were just talking about in donating, for instance, everybody's budget amount is different. You know, mine is $100 a month, you know, and it just depends. Last 2 weeks ago, I had some big expenses preparing for something that I'd done, an event that I did yesterday, which was, you know, $50, just boom, one shot. But, you know, the point that I'm making is I can do $5 to, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 10, you know, 20 candidates. And, you know, $5 doesn't sound like a lot. But if everybody does $5, it's a lot. This next week, I've got, I'm making a gift to the individual that's about to close the show with me. I'm gifting for his graduation. And so that will cut into some of what goes to the candidates normally, but there'll still be some to spread around amongst some other candidates. You know, I budget. I have a budget every month. This month, and it's because I believe in rebuilding the base. We've got to rebuild the base, and that's what you're doing with Conservative Network. That's what Becca's doing with the pack that she's on now, prior to that doing the show with me. It's what Padre Thomas is doing with his network and his ministry. It's what Rick's doing with his show. But listen, guys, Brian, I appreciate it, brother. I'm going to have you back on. Becca, I'm so glad you could be with us. I want to bring in, we're down to 3 minutes, and I'd like to end the show with an old friend of mine, a man that I love, my buddy from St. Louis, Padre Thomas Smith. Padre, how are you doing, brother?
I am good, and actually you got the wrong end of the state. St. Louis is the eastern end of the interstate. I'm at the western end. That'd be Kansas City.
Okay. I apologize.
No problem.
Get me outside of Texas and I'm lost.
Oh, well, Texas, from where I'm at, is straight up I-35. If you're in Dallas-Fort Worth, you shoot up 35 north and you run right smack dab into me. So anyway, I can't be long because I'm getting ready to do a show myself, but I just want to say this, and if you all want to migrate over to my show afterwards, what I'm going to talk about is there's a bill in Congress, in the House, to repeal the Johnson Amendment, which was added to the 501c provision of the tax code to keep pastors and other ministers from talking against congressional candidates. So that's what I'm going to talk about on Reality in Christ Ministries Worship Hour tonight. And on top of that, I just had I had someone email me, so on Facebook, so I'm going to see how it goes, but it's an independent candidate for president. Her name is Sammy Tuttle, just interviewed me to come on my show tonight, so I'm going to see how that goes. So if you all want to come check it out, it could be a liberal plant. I don't know, but we'll see.
Well, you know what? I'm going to try to join you tonight, Padre. It's been a while since I have. If, for those of you folks that don't, it's the Invisible Conservative. You can find him. Just check those people that I follow. You'll see the Invisible Conservative. Padre, tell us.
Hello? Hello.
I'm sorry. Hang on.
Okay.
My studio board is acting up for some reason. I keep dropping into the screen mode, but that's because we're winding down to the end of the show here, Padre. But real quickly, you're Invisible Conservative on Blog Talk Radio. You're working on the last we talked, you were working on a separate deal you had going on. How has that ended up?
Oh, you. You mean the Frederick Douglass Foundation?
Absolutely, yes.
Yep, it's all a part of the same thing, because the Frederick Douglass Foundation, we are a pro-life ministry. And if you guys want to just migrate over to the show, I could talk about a little bit of that as well, because I have 39 seconds to call in, and so I've got to call in.
All right, my brother, I love you. We'll catch you on Facebook. I'll be on your show here in a little bit.
All right, God bless you.
Thank you, Padre. Love you all. We're 9876. We're running down. Thank you so much. There'll be no show next Sunday. It's Mother's Day weekend. I love you all. May 20th, Sergeant Quintana from Change It Back 2012. Hey, you guys there? Back up.
16 miles out of Denver with solo.
Rick?
2,000 markers more to go. Crisscrossing country. So many believe in. You're out there doing what you would die for. Keep us safe.